House will come to order. The clerk will call the roll. Barker.
Here.
Barnhart.
Here.
Berger. Beyer.
Here.
Bonamici.
Here.
Boone. Boquist. Bruin. Buckley. Burley. Butler. Cameron. Cannon. Clem. Cowan. Dallum. Dingfelder. Chris Edwards. David Edwards. Esquivel. Flores. Galizio. Garrard. Gelzer. Gilliam. Gilman. Gerard. Greenlick. Hannah. Holvey. Hunt. Jensen. Comp. Kotek. Krieger. Crummel. Lim. McPherson. Maurer. Minnis. Morgan. Nathanson. Nelson. Nolan. Olson. Reed. Richardson. Riley. Roblin. Rosenbaum. Schaffler. Scott. Shields. Greg Smith. Patty Smith. Thatcher. Tomei. Wisnet. Witt. Mr. Speaker. Excused. Boone. Esquivel. Reed. Witt. Excuse for business of the House. Nolan.
Flag salute will be led by Representative Mitch Greenlick.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We are very fortunate to have today two very important guests with us. We have Robert Doc Newell. He served as the Speaker of the Oregon House under the Oregon Provisional Government. Preceded that as a fur trader. And we have Joe Meek, a mountain man who also became Marshal of the Oregon Territory. So we're delighted to have a few words from them this morning.
Gentlemen, and apparently ladies now as well, it's my great pleasure to stand here before you today, since I have been dead for 140 years. Because I was the first Speaker of the House, during the provisional government, that is, and also served in both territorial and state governments as well, I have been granted the honor of addressing you all just a few days past my 200th birthday. And who better to share the podium with me today than my old friend, Mr. Joseph L. Meek. Joe, what was that title you so graciously bestowed upon yourself?
Envoy Extraordinary and Minister Plenipotentiary from the Republic of Oregon to the Court of the United States. At your service.
Ah, yes. And the best remembered story about you, Joe, which appears in the picture on the wall of this very chamber, was how you saved the day to establish the provisional government at Champuig when you cried out,
"Who's for a divide? All in favor of the committee and organization, follow me."
But Joe, the way the story is still often told today and has been for many years, with the vote being 52-50 in favor. Now, I'm not disagreeing with what you said exactly. Well, let me explain. Since I was there too, voting with you and other Americans and French Canadians in favor of the resolution. In short, what really happened on that fateful day in May 1843 was that George Le Breton, a secretary of the committee, had moved that the meeting divide preparatory to being counted, in essence calling for a divide, whereupon old Joe here, well, yes, old Joe here forcefully shouted out, as was his style, this very thing. And as the two lines were being formed, considerable pulling and hauling with sharp words took place. And after about half an hour, the vote was counted. The vote was not decided by two French Canadians, but by a greater majority being carried by five votes, and with at least as many Frenchmen voting in support. And whether government in Oregon really began on that second day of May 1843, well, even that's a matter of debate. You see, even before the vote at Shampooey, Ewing Young did the very worst thing he could do to the good Dr. McLaughlin at Fort Vancouver. Indeed, he did the very best thing he could have done to establish government here in Oregon. He died. He died, you see, without a will and without an heir, and had many head of cattle on his vast lands. People asked what was to become of all this wealth and property. And the answer was government. The rest is history. The Wolf meetings, the vote at Shampooey, the organic laws, the provisional and then the territorial governments, and finally, of course, statehood and state government. Oh, and the debates that raged about our government in those early years. The first great debate was whether or not to form our own independent nation. Another was whether or not to have a governor. Yes, and the motion passed. I am not, by the way, suggesting that this issue be... talking about the governor is really quite a stumbling thing to say, I would think, here. But this issue should not be debated again by either today's or tomorrow's legislators. I'm just sharing a little history. Oh, we also had discussed and agreed to the voluntary payment of taxes, but it didn't work out very well. And Joe, weren't you the one that collected those first taxes?
Yes, I was the sheriff, as you well know. And that reminds me of a story.
Joe, as much as I'd like to give you the floor, our time is short. A few parting thoughts to all of you who have been so gracious enough to lend me your ear. And yes, besides the Bible, various works of Shakespeare trapped with me in the mountains. These books made clear to me that what men and women think and feel and do make government necessary, whether we like it or not. Our desires can get the better of us, like wanting wealth or fame or power or even clinging to what we think is right, instead of opening ourselves up to get a better understanding of what the truth might really be. And having the greater view that one attains beyond death itself is what I knew in life as being so. There are simple truths common to all, whether pioneer or Indian, whether British, American, or French-Canadian, whether man, woman, or child, whether young or old, whether farmer or lawyer. And whether or not we choose to awaken to our common humanity, to think, speak, and act according to what we know to be true in both our hearts and minds is up to each one of us. There really is no other choice than to do our best, whether as a public servant or household servant, whether teacher or student, whether those more fortunate than most or those less fortunate, to do whatever we can every moment of our life, which is all too short, to remove the pain and suffering around us, and to love with respect and thankfulness, simply and wholeheartedly love all people, this very earth, and all the wild things upon it. Love can conquer any power, and everyone has the power to love. But legislators are elected to a special place where they can put the power of love into action through government. This is your moment in history. All the world's a stage, and all the people its players. I sincerely pray you play your part well. Thank you.
Thank you so much for bringing us this wisdom across the years, for laying the foundation for our government 150 years ago, and as we just learned, providing some of the land as well, and for the insights you presented this morning. Al LePage depicted Robert Doc Newell. And Robert Hart depicted Joe Meek. Thank you very much, and we will take your words to heart. Build on the foundation that you have given us. Thank you. Courtesies. First, I'd like to welcome back Representative Minnis. It's a delight to have you back with us. Welcome.
Good to have you.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have on the side aisle today a few special guests. One is Mr. Truman Price, who is a fiddler and will be continuing the celebration of Doc Newell's birthday on the second floor reception area. Along with him, we have members of the Oregon Society of the Daughters of the American Revolution, whose mission is very important here in Oregon. Their mission is the preservation of history and education and promotion of patriotism. They have four museums here in Oregon that they own and operate. One is the Robert Newell Museum in Shampooig Park. The second one is the Pioneer Mother's Cabin in the also in Shampooig Park, and Caples House Museum in Columbia City, and the Schmink Museum in Lakeview, Oregon. Please welcome them. They will be helping us celebrate, continuing the celebration of Robert Doc Newell's birthday today. Thank you.
Thank you. It's good to have you with us. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to have you extend the welcome to a very special friend of mine from Pendleton and the author of the book on Robert Doc Newell, Mr. Guy Delamater, and he has his lovely wife with him, who will probably prefer to remain seated, Guy, good to have you here.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I hope you'll join me today in welcoming my other favorite intern, my son, Andrew Simon. Andrew is a freshman at Bard College in New York, majoring in American Studies. He enjoys politics, literature, architecture, and he's currently enrolled in a class on contemporary political theory, so if you have a couple minutes to engage him in discussion, I'm sure he will yield to your questions. Thank you for making him feel welcome today.
Welcome, Andrew. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd ask you to join me in welcoming Sarah Brill from Corvallis and her parents, Carol and Jean Brill, who have come all the way from Pendleton. They were here today in honor of Sarah's daughter Carly's memory in support of House Bill 3328, Carly's Law, which would improve child abuse investigations. Welcome to the Capitol. And I would also like to ask you to join me in welcoming my special guest today, who is CASA, a court-appointed special advocate, and also my mother. This is Jo Akers, and she's also my constituent. So welcome to the Capitol, Mom.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe up here in this gallery, is that the south one? Is Charlotte Lehan. She is the mayor of Wilsonville and has been since 1997. Seems like eons ago for probably both her and I. And she, in her day job, is the executive director of the Friends of Shampooig and the general store there as well. And so I'd like to welcome her to the chamber today.
Representatives Jeff Barker and Kevin Cameron had birthdays yesterday, Sunday, April 1st, 2007. So happy birthday. Further courtesies. Messages from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to reform that he has approved and signed the following bill, House Bill 2139.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate has passed House Bill 2163, Senate Bill 59, 94, 118, 687, House Bill 2357, 2361, 5007, 5008, 5009, 5010, 5017, 5039, 2122, 2267, 2271, 2316, and 2319.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. The clerk will read the resolution.
HCR 4, declaring March 30, 2007, Robert Doc Newell Day in Oregon.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of House Concurrent Resolution Number 4A. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. House Concurrent Resolution 4 celebrates the anniversary, the 200th anniversary, of Robert Doc Newell's birthday. He's one of Oregon's most interesting and, to date, least celebrated founders of the state. In 1841, Doc Newell founded the town of Shampooig in what is now a part of my legislative district. As you've heard today, he was present at the famous organizational meeting of the first American government on the Pacific Coast at Shampooig. Now, colleagues, if you look at the mural on the wall above the speaker's rostrum, you'll see Doc Newell, while sitting below, but up in the mural, you will see him along with his pioneer friends, including Joe Meek, who is in the bright orange and buckskin, and Newell is above him in the hat with his arms crossed. He's kind of behind. This mural sets the scene in Shampooig, May 2nd, 1843, the day that 102 settlers of the Willamette Valley met to consider the question of how and who best should govern Oregon. This vote essentially organized the first provisional government of Oregon. Newell was a man of many accomplishments. We celebrate these accomplishments at the bicentennial of his birth, but we also use this opportunity to recognize those first Oregon settlers who farmed the rich green earth of the Willamette Valley, and those first Oregon settlers who set up the government of the state. Over the weekend, the Friends of Historic Shampooig and the Oregon Society of the Daughters of the American Revolution held celebrations at the historic Newell House with plenty of birthday cake, I might add. And today, the 200th Newell birthday party came to the state capitol, and they will be on the second floor after the session and continuing the celebration. I encourage you to stop in and see what they have to offer. Making this celebration complete would be the passage of House Concurrent Resolution 4. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of House Concurrent Resolution 4A.
To the resolution.
To the resolution. Thank you. Robert Doc Newell was one of Oregon's founders, as you just heard, and he seemed to be at all of the key places at critical times. Shampooig for the famous divide, where American government first began. The first laws, the first newspaper, the Oregon Spectator, the first to drive a wagon into the Willamette Valley, first commercial navigation, and the list goes on and on. He was definitely a man of first. We celebrate his 200th anniversary of his birth because it reminds us of Oregon's beginnings. As a mountain man with his friend Joe Meek, he blazed the first wagon trail into the Willamette Valley. And I should say that when I was talking with Mr. Meek earlier out in the second floor reception area, he had a story that he wanted to tell me, but time was not going to allow it at that particular moment. Doc Newell settled at Shampooig, where French Prairie met the Willamette River, and started a farm, a store, and eventually a town, which was after the flood called Newellsville. He voted with the American settlers at the Shampooig Divide on May 3, 1843, and was instrumental in the first American government in Oregon and on the Pacific Coast. He and eight others voted in the Organic Acts, the Oregon's first laws, and they were based on the laws of Iowa and served with distinction in the provisional legislature. He served as the legislature in the provisional, territorial, and state governments of Oregon, but always in the People's House. That's this one, folks. He founded and platted the town of Shampooey and watched it grow from a gathering place along the river to a bustling wheat shipping town, only to see it swept away by the Willamette in a 50-foot-high flood. It wiped out the town, but he gave refuge to 200 of his neighbors, and after the flood, and through his generosity, he helped these early Oregonians survive. He worked to site Oregon's first capital, at one point offering to donate four square blocks in Shampooey to locate the capital there. He started the first commercial transport business, building keel boats, which took Willamette Valley wheat to market. And then, as I mentioned earlier, he was a founding director of the first Oregon newspaper, the Oregon Spectator, which took on public issues of the day with candor and spirit, as we probably noted this morning in his presentation before us. He was also a great friend to the Native Americans, and they respected him for his fairness, acting as the first Indian sub-agent in Oregon. Today, his name is perpetuated by Newell Creek, east of Oregon City in Clackamas County. Oregonian editor Harvey Scott announced Robert Newell's death in 1869 by saying, "No one's name is more familiar to the people of Oregon than that of Dr. Newell," end quote. Through Robert Newell, a man of many firsts, current Oregonians can better understand Oregon's first settlers, the self-government they fashioned, and the challenges they faced. This understanding will help current Oregonians understand and appreciate those unique qualities which make us all Oregonians. And so I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion of House Concurrent Resolution 4A. Seeing none. Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion the resolution should pass will vote aye, and those opposed no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dingfelder votes aye. House Concurrent Resolution 4A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. And Dr. Newell, while it's not in our tradition with the decorum of the House to applaud, we want to again thank you very much for coming and talking with us this morning. Thank you. Propositions and motions. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that consideration of House Bill 3532 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Tuesday, April 3rd, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 5040 relating to financial administration of the public employees retirement system and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2345 relating to dogs. House Bill 2386 relating to physical therapy. House Bill 2538 relating to landscape contractor continuing education and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2650 relating to standards for items sold in schools and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2826 relating to corporations. House Bill 2941 relating to motor vehicle transactions. House Bill 3159 relating to benefits for performing military service and declaring an emergency.
Bills read a second time or passed the third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the first bill in short summary.
House Bill 2223 relating to coverage of successor employers by Oregon Safe Employment Act. Expands definition of employer for purposes of Oregon Safe Employment Act to include successor employers.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2223A. Those with opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Representative Barnhart votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Gilliam votes aye. Representative Wisnett votes aye. And Representative Thatcher votes no. House Bill 2223A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, will read the next bill in short summary.
House Bill 2233, relating to liens on tax-deferred property, applies existing provisions for property tax liens against tax-deferred homesteads to security interests in tax-deferred manufactured structures that are treated as personal property for tax purposes.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2233A. Those with opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Maurer, how do you vote? Maurer votes aye. Representative Thatcher votes aye. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. Representative Dingfelder votes aye. And Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2233A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, will read the next bill in summary.
House Bill 2970, relating to Wildlife Violator Compact, clarifies suspension and revocation of violators' license pursuant to Wildlife Violator Compact.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2970. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative McPherson, how do you vote? McPherson votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Crummell votes aye. Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative Greenlick votes aye. And Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2970, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Question now, the clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2762, relating to voter registration.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2762. Representative Thatcher.
Colleagues, House Bill 2762 comes to you from your Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules, where it received a unanimous vote, and not because all of us endorse current law, because I think it has some problems, but it was important this bill be explained rather than being placed on the consent calendar. It is a clarification of existing law. Under current law, homeless persons who are otherwise qualified to vote are eligible to register as voters, showing, if necessary, the county clerk's office as their address. But there has been a problem when people are not homeless, rather their homes are mobile, such as mobile homes or motor homes and recreational vehicles, or they reside in temporary quarters for a variety of reasons. These people are not homeless, but they have no permanent address. For purposes of voter registration, current law says that their residence may be any physical location in the county. House Bill 2762 clarifies that people who live in temporary quarters are eligible to register as voters in the same manner that anyone who is homeless can register to vote.
Further discussion, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise in support of this bill and to thank my colleague from Kaiser for her gracious carrying of this proposal.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question for the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does Carrie yield?
Yes.
She does.
Representative, I'm a little bit concerned. How do I get my ballot mailed to me?
It gets mailed to the county clerk's office. They can pick it up there. That's where they're registering. That's where their address is.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close?
No, I do not.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Dellum, how do you vote? Dellum votes aye. Representative Hanna votes no. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Olson votes aye. Representative Wisnett votes aye. Representative Krieger votes aye. Representative Crummell, how do you vote? Crummell votes no. House Bill 2762, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2823, relating to internment camps.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2823A. Representative Clem. Representative Kotek is going to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today in support of House Bill 2823.
Colleagues, can we have your attention to the carrier, please?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Monday, February 19th in 2007 of this year, marked the 65th anniversary of President Franklin Roosevelt's signing of Executive Order 9066, the order that authorized the military to forcibly remove and relocate Japanese Americans living in Western states. The order resulted in the internment of 120,000 Japanese Americans under harsh conditions. Oregon used the Pacific International Livestock Exposition Facilities to hold detainees. The site is now the Portland Expo Center, which is in North Portland in my district. The first Japanese American arrived May 2, 1942. The last detainee departed September 10, 1942. The peak population was 3,676 men, women, and children. Detainees were held temporarily at this site before being moved to one of 10 permanent locations across the West. In total, 109,384 people who had, quote, one drop of blood, unquote, of Japanese descent were sent to the internment camps. 70,000 were born in this country. They were our citizens. 3,500 were Oregonians. 2,250 were born in the state. Today we have an opportunity to rectify some of what happened in that year when people were removed from their homes and relocated. House Bill 2823 would require a public post-secondary school in Oregon to issue an honorary degree upon request to anyone who had been a student at the school in 1942 and did not graduate because they were ordered to an internment camp. The honorary degree can be requested by the individual or that person's family. I urge you to support this bill, colleagues. I would like to thank Andy Kayuna, a Japanese American student at the Oregon State University who inspired this bill. I'd also like to thank Joel Fisher, my legislative assistant, for bringing Andy's idea to myself and Representative Clem. This bill is a small gesture to redress the harm caused by an unjust part of our past. It will not correct past mistakes, but I hope it will restore some amount of dignity and pride. I urge an aye vote on House Bill 2823. Representative Clem?
Thank you, Representative. Growing up, the only thing I really knew about Pearl Harbor and the after effects firsthand was that my grandfather had served there on the USS New Orleans, where the phrase, "Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition," originated. It wasn't until much later that I learned about the effects on some of the other people's families, namely my lovely bride, who is sitting in the House chambers, Carol Suzuki. Her father, Hideo Suzuki, was born in Hood River, a U.S. citizen, and he was interned in a concentration camp due to his Japanese ancestry. I spent the several years before his death 2 years ago learning about farming and life from Susie, but I never once heard him discuss nor complain about being interned. Like many internees, the experience, I think, was placed far away in a quiet place in their hearts and minds. But for many of their spouses and children and grandchildren, and hopefully for all of us, the remembrance lives on as an example of what we are capable of and must eternally be vigilant against, as Congress termed it when it apologized in 1988, the fundamental violation of the basic civil liberties and constitutional rights of the individuals. Beyond that lesson and the remembrance that this year is the 65th anniversary of, the question for me is why this bill and why now? There's two answers I would give you. One, the apology not only went to living internees, not their spouses, not their family members, children, or grandchildren. If you're interested, I have a copy of the original apology that came to my father-in-law here on my desk. This bill remedies that additional injustice by allowing a representative of the deceased person to also participate in receiving the honorary degree. And there have been examples in other parts of the country for high school diplomas particularly where someone in their 80s or 90s received their high school degree and then a grandchild or child also stood alongside them in full pomp and circumstance. And the other reason is that this year is the 65th anniversary of the internment. And that the internees affected directly by this, the ones who actually were taken from their colleges and universities, are now in their mid-80s. You may have seen in the clips a woman who was 84 recently, taken from University of Oregon when she was, I think, 18 years old. This may be the very last opportunity to right a wrong to the living. In closing, I just want to read a paragraph because what's always fascinated me is the attitude of the internees themselves. Usually it's the children and grandchildren who are the most upset about it verbally and certainly the people who learn about it in history. But this is a message from the president of the Japanese American Citizens League, basically through a newsletter that I'm 56 years old, and this is the original one that Carol's dad kept. He said, "When we leave our homes, let us leave with a smiling face and courageous mind. Let us look upon ourselves as the pioneers of a new era, looking forward to the greatest adventure of our times. Let us conquer whatever frontiers may await us with the same fortitude and patience as did our fathers and mothers who contributed more to the development of the West than most of us realize. Let us serve our country in the hardest way possible for us to serve, keeping in mind that we have the same objective in mind as 130 million other Americans, the ultimate and complete victory of democracy's forces." Colleagues, this is a great opportunity to, again, right a wrong, and a great opportunity to do it while some of the internees still might take advantage of it. I encourage your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the
In
bill.
1942, the United States had recently been attacked in the Pacific, and there was fear running rampant of a possible invasion by Japan of the West Coast. On sober reflection and on the passage of time, we recognize that the reaction of our government then was a substantial and unjust overreaction. that led to the disruption, a substantial and significant disruption of the lives of many citizens of the United States. I think this bill today is an important reminder of the kind of thing that fear and hysteria can do, even to people who are bright, capable, and who led our country at a time of great peril, and whose decisions we agree with and believe were necessary. Some of them were not. I hope that we pass this bill today, and that in the process of passing this bill, we keep in mind what fear, hysteria can do as we think about those who come from a different culture, a different racial background, and a different religion. And that we make decisions now based on real threats and not on fear and hysteria. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kotek, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, thank you. As the good representative mentioned in today's clips, there's a story in the Oregonian, and it profiles Alice Sumita, who was a University of Oregon student, who had, like so many other Japanese Americans in Oregon, had her life interrupted. She was able to go on and get a degree, but it really would mean a lot to her to have that honorary degree from the University of Oregon. The article also talks about another individual, Sam Nato, who it's too painful for him to apply for that honorary degree. This is still a painful memory and a difficult issue for many folks here in Oregon. And remembering is important, and I would echo what the good representative said that fear creates a lot of bad things, even from very good people. And not only does this bill honor those whose lives were interrupted, but also forces us to remember that we have to be careful to not repeat such things. I urge your aye vote on this bill. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2823A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Olson, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, request return to courtesies.
Representative Olson requests unanimous consent to return to courtesies without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, if you take a look up above there, you'll see that there's about 60 students from North Albany Elementary, if you'd stand. All right. And two of their teachers are with us today, Kelly Roof and Kirsten Martin. Thank you.
It's very good to have you with us. Other courtesies. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Clerk will read the memorial.
H.J.M. 10, urging President and Congress to revise tax treatment and legal status of veterans' mortgage bonds.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of House Joint Memorial 10. Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Joint Memorial 10 comes from your House Committee on Veterans Affairs, and I actually sponsored this bill on behalf of Representative Ed Patterson. Before I explain the bill, I should first thank the good representative from Polk and Yamhill counties who raised this issue during the last legislative session and attempted to get Congress to address it, and of course extend my courtesies to the good representative from Beaverton and Alloa who helped us raise it again this session. If you read the measure itself, it says, we urge the President of the United States and Congress to remove provisions of federal law that disqualified veterans' mortgage bonds from tax-exempt status if the bonds proceed are used for acquiring or replacing existing mortgages. Now, I can already get through the whole thing, so I'll explain it in English now. In very simple, the Oregon Veterans Home Loan Program, which is one of a few programs like it across the nation, can only issue loans to new veterans and new purchases. Thus, if there is a death in the family, or if there's a divorce of their family, or other change in circumstances, they cannot refinance that home because of a quirk in the federal law. If you'd like, so inclined to fall asleep late at night, you may get the federal code out and look up Section 143, Public Law 99-514, passed in 1986. And then after you've got about halfway through that, you'll fall asleep just like I do. The bottom line, though, is that we need to continue to put pressure on the Congress itself to change the quirk in this law that allows our veterans to refinance their home loans in cases of death or divorce or other reasons. This is a good memorial. Should pass. Please vote yes.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Boquist, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass, the memorial should pass, will vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Representative Tomei votes aye. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Nelson votes aye. House Joint Memorial 10, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, will read the next resolution. Okay, we don't read it. Okay. Chair requests unanimous consent the consideration of HCR 6 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Monday, April 16, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Barnhart, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies.
Representative Barnhart requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Without objection, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I note in the balcony that a former member, a former Democratic leader, and a current mayor of the city of Eugene, Kitty Piercy, is in attendance. And I'd like you to welcome her.
It's great to have you with us. Further courtesies. Returning to final reading, memorials and resolutions, the chair requests unanimous consent the rules be suspended. The House concurrent resolution 7 be carried over to its proper place on Tuesday, April 3rd, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk, will read the next resolution.
HCR 9, congratulating Lapine on becoming Oregon's newest city.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of House Concurrent Resolution 9. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Honorable colleagues, I ask your support of House Concurrent Resolution 9 today. I have the honor of representing the city of Lapine, Oregon's newest city in South Deschutes County. This area was first explored in 1825, and is also three other times they tried to incorporate. In this last election, they incorporated with about 1,500 citizens. So I ask your support of this House Concurrent Resolution 9. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wisnett, do you wish to close? He does not. Those are opinion. The resolution should pass. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. House Concurrent Resolution 9, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 34, relating to electronic prescription drug database and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 59, relating to insurance coverage for acupuncture service. Senate Bill 94, relating to construction contractors. Senate Bill 118, relating to protection of consumers from unconsciously excessive prices and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 482, relating to real estate broker compensation. Senate Bill 517, relating to students and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 678, relating to supervision of physical assistance. Senate Bill 687, relating to insurance coverage for transportation of human remains.
Bills read first time or passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5502 relating to the Financial Administration of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services, appropriate money, declare an emergency. Senate Bill 5510 relating to the Financial Administration of the Employment Department, appropriate money, declare an emergency. Senate Bill 5514 relating to Financial Administration of the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries and appropriate money, declare an emergency. Senate Bill 5523 relating to Financial Administration of the State Library, appropriate money, declare an emergency. Senate Bill 5524 relating to Financial Administration of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, declare an emergency. Senate Bill 5526 relating to Financial Administration of the State Marine Board and declare an emergency. Senate Bill 5532 relating to Financial Administration of the State Board of Pharmacy and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 61 relating to Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Action Services. Senate Bill 83 relating to terminology describing persons. Senate Bill 84 relating to corrections of erroneous material in Oregon law. Senate Bill 147 relating to Board of Medical Examiners for the State of Oregon. Senate Bill 196 relating to unemployment insurance fraud. Senate Bill 223 relating to exemption from weight limitations for vehicles with auto reduction assistance and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 224 relating to railroad inspector qualifications. Senate Bill 230 relating to authority of State Board of Psychology Examiners. Senate Bill 362 relating to Oregon Prescription Drug Program and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. The question now arises on third reading and final passage. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 194 relating to reconsideration of determination made by Employment Department.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 194. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today carrying Senate Bill 194 to the House of Representatives from your House Committee on Business and Labor. Senate Bill 194 passed from the committee with a do-pass recommendation on a 7-0 vote. This bill expands the circumstances under which the director of the Employment Department may reconsider a determination of an unemployment tax case by a hearings officer of the Office of Administrative Hearings. Senate Bill 194 adds two reasons for the director to be able to reconsider a determination. In addition to computation errors, clerical errors, and facts not previously known by the director, this bill expands the grounds to include misinformation provided to the department and errors caused by the misapplication of the law. Colleagues, when they get it wrong, we just want to make sure they can, by law, get it right. I urge an aye vote on Senate Bill 194. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holby, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass, a vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Burley votes aye. Senate Bill 194, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
Senate Bill 330, relating to Interstate Compact for Resource Sharing.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 330. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 330 is designed to create a venue for all local governments to either request or to respond to requests for assistance in non-declared emergencies. I want to ask all of you to please request from your county your emergency preparedness plan, as I hope we vote right now unanimously to approve Senate Bill 330. Your emergency plan is critical to the survival of our state.
Further discussion? Representative Nelson, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Greenlick votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Senate Bill 330, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Do we have any announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I want to read you an article that was in yesterday's paper. A Redmond man and woman die in an ATV crash Saturday afternoon. It's published April 1st, 2007 at 5 in the afternoon. A Redmond man and a Redmond woman were killed about 2 p.m. Saturday after the all-terrain vehicle they were riding on tumbled over a canal embankment on public land east of Redmond, according to a news release from the Deschutes County Sheriff's Office. Donnie LaDale Moody, age 31, and Debbie E. Schubert, age 45, were pronounced dead at the scene, according to the release. Neither appeared to be wearing a helmet. The crash occurred when the two riding together on a Polaris quad attempted to turn onto an access road along an empty irrigation canal and public land nearby State Highway 126 at milepost 3, according to the release. They went over the embankment and landed headfirst at the bottom of the canal. Alcohol was not considered a factor in this accident. The Bureau of Land Management personnel are investigating the incident. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I wanted to tell you this on Friday, but I didn't have a chance, so very quickly, I just want you to know that the last surviving American woman to serve in World War I died last Thursday, at a nursing home outside Boonboro, Maryland. She was 109. She was the oldest living female military veteran. As America became involved in the war in 1917, the Navy opened support roles to women, and this great woman and her sister were among the first to sign up. She worked in a gun factory and as a secretary. She was a yeoman second class and yeomanite when the war ended. She continued to work for the Navy in the District of Columbia until retirement in 1953. She was an 80-year member of the American Legion. Guess what, women? She could vote for American Legion post before she could vote as a U.S. citizen. She was the chair of the Legion celebration of the 150th anniversary of the U.S. Constitution celebration in 1936. There were 10 American World War I veterans when we began this year. There are now 5. This brilliant, wonderful, dedicated woman was named Charlotte Winters.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Return to announcements.
Return to the announcements. Representative Roblin requests unanimous consent. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Democratic Caucus today at noon.
Are there further announcements? Representative Nelson, did you wish to check back in?
Yes, if I could, please, Mr. Speaker. And I would like to return to remonstrances.
Are there any further announcements? We are back in remonstrances. Representative Nelson, I'm informed that once you have used your 3 minutes under remonstrances, you can't give a second remonstrances under the tradition.
Can we stay under announcements then?
Representative Nelson requests unanimous consent to return to announcements without objection. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, It was 2001. I fired my legislative aide for sending out a joke that I thought was very inappropriate on the internet, but I waited till session was over. Anyway, for those of you who think I really wrote that joke and made it up myself in the Capitol clips today, let me assure you, I did not. I'm not that smart, and I'm not that clever, and I hope my aide is listening.
Thank you. Are there further announcements? I would like to remind you all that we will be celebrating Doc Newell's 200th birthday at the second floor reception area outside the clerk's office. Representative Jensen, can we proceed to adjournment at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, April 3rd, 2007?
Mr. Speaker, I move we adjourn until 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, April 3rd, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, April 3rd, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.